Since yesterday, Wisconsin Public Radio has reported on a new record for coronavirus confirmed cases in the state. On the state superintendent for public instruction arguing for the need for better broadband and mental health services for students in our schools, and a new jobless rate for August that's better than the record unemployment in April, but still about twice what it was last year at this time. Those are just some of the issues members of the legislature have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Today on the West Side, we bring in the candidates for the 68th Assembly seat to hear 68th District Assembly seat to hear how they would work to solve those problems. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach. Thank you for joining us today. Our guests are Jesse James of Altoona. He's a former police chief and fire chief in Altoona and a U.S. Army veteran. He first ran for assembly as a Republican 2 years ago after the incumbent, Kathy Bernier, opted to run for the state Senate, a seat that she won. He won in 2018 and is back to try for a second term. Jesse James, welcome back to the West Side.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you for having me on.
Emily Berge of Eau Claire is a licensed professional counselor who owns a mental health office in Eau Claire. She ran for and won a seat on the Eau Claire City Council 2 years ago. She's running for assembly as a Democrat. Emily Berge, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Dean. Thanks for having me.
So the 68th Assembly District is one that includes most of the eastern half of Eau Claire County, southeastern Chippewa County, northeastern Trempealeau County, parts of Jackson County, and much of western Clark County as well. Among the cities included in the district, Altoona, Stanley, Thorpe, Greenwood, and Osseo, as well as a portion of the city of Eau Claire, and the villages of Lake Halley, Fairchild, Fall Creek, Withy, and Hixton are also included in the district. A big part of this exercise in democracy is your opportunity to ask questions of the candidates. There are two ways you can do that. One is by calling 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. The other is to email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Before we launch into our questions for the candidates, a reminder that Wisconsin Public Radio's fall membership drive has started. We won't be doing long pitch breaks during this hour, but to remind you that Wisconsin Public Radio and programs like this one are listener-supported is worthwhile. Your gift makes the Ideas Network possible. If you'd like to contribute, you can do that right now by going to WPR.org. Make that donation today and enjoy the rest of the program. So let's begin with our candidates. Emily Berge, we'll start with you. Why are you interested in moving into state politics as a member of the Assembly?
Well, thanks for that question. I guess it kind of goes back to my bio a little bit. As you pointed out, I'm a licensed professional counselor in private practice, and I've done that for about the last 15 years. I've worked in lots of different areas, worked at Sacred Heart ER and in the behavioral health unit, area schools, and now I'm doing outpatient therapy with mostly couples and individuals, which I really enjoy that work. So with that, you know, it's more helping people on the individual level, small group level, and which I've really enjoyed doing, and I think it's important work to help people and to listen and to help them figure things out in their lives. Well, when I ran for city council, I've done that, you know, the last 2 years, and that's been a really great experience, too, and it's allowed me to help people on the more macro level or community level. And I've really enjoyed that work, too, just, again, bringing people together, helping them out, helping them solve problems, just bridging the gap between neighborhoods and City Hall. I think that's really important work. And so I think I can bring those skills and experience to the statewide level, bringing people together, helping solve problems, finding solutions. And, yeah, I just really I'm a hard worker, and I get things done, and I've shown that with my counseling work and my council work. So looking to bring those to a statewide level as well.
Thank you, Emily Berge. Jesse James, why would you like a second term?
Oh, Dean, thanks for the question. So my first term, I had a theme for it, and it was look, listen, and learn. As a first-time legislator getting down in Madison, you're really excited and enthusiastic, motivated, ready to rock and roll. And, you know, you kind of get told to slow down a little bit, and you kind of take a step back and really grasp the big picture of what everything looks like. I tell a lot of people that I talk with that everybody should have to do this one time because it truly opened up the eyes of how processes and procedures really work in Madison. I love what I do. Being a public servant for the majority of my life, from the military to law enforcement, fire days, EMS, I have a public servant heart. And I take pride in serving the 68th, and it even goes beyond that in serving the state of Wisconsin, looking out for the best interests of most of the 68th Assembly people, but also our entire state. How can we continuously work together and get things done and work bipartisan? Over 90% of our bills passed in the Assembly this last session were bipartisan. So that does work. We do work together, contrary to how what people say and what media reports and stuff like that. But there is good cooperative partnerships and friendships that are created, relationships, and that's really truly how you get things done. I ended up getting a lot of bills through. I have five bills that passed the Assembly this last session, and when I first started in January 9th, I was told I'd be lucky if I passed one bill. But it goes beyond that. I think the constituency work is probably 80% of the work that I do in Madison and representing the people and helping them with any issues, with any ideas that they have, their any creative legislative ideas, any way that I can improve their lives and the lives of the Wisconsin people. That's what I enjoy doing. I have some more work to get done. I have four bills in the Senate right now still waiting. And hopefully we can get those through. But if we don't, that's the first thing I'm going to work on in January. And then I have a whole list of bill ideas from the people of the 68th Assembly District that they want me to work on and look at for next session. And that's what I'm excited to do. I'm ready. Now that I have my feet wet, I'm getting ready to, you know, I'm feeling the water, and I'm ready to jump in and continue on the path and adventure that I'm on right now.
Our candidates in the 68th Assembly District are Jesse James, the voice you just heard, and Emily Berge. Your chance to ask questions, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. I opened the show talking about COVID-19. It's on the rise still in Wisconsin. Yesterday, the state set a new record for the number of positive cases reported on a single day. Over 2,000 for the first time. And Eau Claire County, which I mentioned is part of the 68th Assembly District, also reported an all-time high for the number of new cases this past week. Jesse James, how do you rate the state and local response of the pandemic so far?
Well, it's a very good question, and I get this one frequently. The state response, with this being a whole new issue that our state, our nation, the world is experiencing and facing, I think there's a lot more questions than we even still have answers for. The state response, we started out well. I think that maybe with the protective measures, the mask mandate maybe should have been done right away rather than waiting months after the fact. I have questions on that. It's a continuous, fluid pandemic that we're dealing with. We're continuously learning more and more about it every day. There's more data and more exposure of things being reported. It's a continuous learning process. Now, I'm glad that we have local control at the local level to look at what's best interest for our region. Doing everything statewide didn't make sense to me when we didn't have the exposure and the positive cases being reported. You know, the thing, I hear words like we're going to stop the spread, we're going to contain it. Well, I have my logical common sense thinking comes into play here, and I'm questioning, have we ever been able to stop a cold? Have we ever been able to stop the flu? No, we haven't. So I'm just kind of questioning on how and what is the plan to stop this if that's what the total purpose and intent is. Because before, when it all started, it was to flatten the curve, and, you know, we took proactive action regarding flattening the curve, and I think it was, for the most part, successful. But moving on and moving forward, as this thing progresses, we see that the death tolls are decreasing. And it's sad. I mean, death is going to be a part of this. Death is a part of the flu. The death is part of pneumonia. Death is part of disease. And that's the reality of what we face being born. I mean, that's just, as human beings, you know, we're all going to die. And that's a grim reality. We just don't know. God has our days numbered, not us. So can we take the protective measures and the responsible preventative ways of helping with this? Absolutely. I support that. If we can keep our schools open and keep our businesses open, keep Wisconsin open, I think for the most part we're doing an okay job as we continue to learn more and more about this. And I applaud the efforts of all of our businesses, the patients that they've had, our schools and the superintendents, and putting back their safety plans into place, working with the local health directors, because that's what the Department of Public Instruction ordered. They said that they wanted the schools to work with the local authority or local public health directors, and that's what they've done, and I applaud all these efforts. We need to continue to work together and get through this together and move Wisconsin forward, and I think we're gonna be okay as we learn more and more. I mean, this is brand new to us, and the data and the science and the facts are all coming out more and more each and every day, and it obviously raises more questions that the general public has. So that's where we're at.
Emily Berge, your turn to answer that. What legislative measures would you support in response to the pandemic, and do you approve of the state's approach so far?
Well, what I'm hearing when I'm out in the district in the 68th is people are frustrated that there's a lack of leadership at the statewide level. You know, they are looking for leadership, so people working at the statewide level to get things done. And people, it's hard. Like, as a business owner, it's hard to figure this stuff out. Like, you know, when everything shut down, then when things, like, all of a sudden reopened, and, like, how do I protect my clients the best? And there were so many questions, and there are still so many questions, and we need answers. And I think a statewide level is the best way to put that guidance out there. So I think people are looking for that leadership. I've been looking for that leadership, to be honest. I think it's also important to listen to experts. You know, our local health director she's working. And the whole health department is working so hard at keeping our community safe. She's building partnerships, you know, with the business community, the statewide level, national level, trying to figure out what's best to protect the community. I mean, that's her job. That's her degree and experience in. I do think, you know, to keep businesses open, which I think is very important as well. You know, again, you look at the experts, and, you know, the Federal Reserve Chairman has said that wearing masks can lead to enormous economic gains, and wearing masks and distancing can ensure economic recovery. You know, and other experts in the field business, when we didn't have a mask mandate, the first people that were emailing me on my council role is small businesses that wanted a mask mandate because their employees were getting verbally harassed. They were destroying, customers were coming in, being verbally upset, destroying things, like dumping food out. And they wanted to protect their employees. They wanted to, they needed that, again, that leadership from the statewide level. And they weren't giving it, so then they go to city council looking for the, leadership there. And then, you know, statewide, the governor did a mask mandate. But that's the kind of thing that we need, is these statewide guidance and mandates, if possible, to do. It just makes things are so challenging right now, like in everyone's personal life. I know in my personal life things are challenging with my kids in school and my business and, you know, taking care of my clients. And we just need that leadership. just to like kind of take that burden off just a little bit so we can keep moving forward and doing what we need to do.
Emily Berge is the Democratic candidate in the 68th Assembly District. Jesse James is the Republican. You can join the conversation and join with your questions. Coming out of the break, we'll hear from Chris in Eau Claire. Later on from Vern and Boyd, there's still a line open for you at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, and Ellen has a question she's already shared. We'll get to those coming up. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on the West Side, and we're talking to the candidates in the 68th Assembly District. Jesse James, the Republican incumbent from Altoona, and Emily Berge, the Democratic challenger from Eau Claire. And let's go to the phones, and let's go to Chris. Chris in Eau Claire, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Dean, Emily, and Jesse. And I'm thankful that I can ask my question. So here it goes. The only place that the rising concern of child poverty is dealt with to a high degree on a daily basis is your Wisconsin public schools, serving approximately 860,000 children and their families and their communities. A good example of this is the 30 million meals coordinated and supplied to Wisconsin from the start of the Safer at Home order to yesterday. That statistic came from the Department of Public Instruction. Many of those meals went out right here in the Chippewa Valley. What policies and or budget increases would you support that are tied to poverty in the Chippewa Valley that would increase the number of children entering public schools ready to learn, especially in light of COVID-19?
Jesse James, we'll let you respond to that first. What's your response to how do we help with the poverty situation?
The child poverty situation, you know, the budget this last time around, we did make a $500 million investment into K-12 education, which some of those monies went for programs, just as what Chris is mentioning. I know a lot of the school districts around the area had supplied food programs, breakfast, lunch, meals to their children while this shutdown was happening, the quarantine or shelter in place, safer at home order. And even after that was done, even through the summer, I know school districts took advantage of that, of this. The governor had over $2 billion through the CARES Act to do with what he wanted. And monies, I don't know if he funneled any monies into programs like this, but obviously this was an issue that I was made aware of as a legislator. And my reach outs to the governor's office and urging him to funnel monies to certain programs were heard, but they weren't ever completed. It's hard times when we have to put priority. And I'm not going to make any budget promises on this radio show at all, because we're going to have to do a budget repair bill. And that's the reality of what we're facing. And even the governor recognized that. He made that statement that there's going to be difficult decisions moving forward and what we're going to have to do as a state and what our priorities are going to be. Now, my wife was a teacher. I support K-12 education. I don't like how we get a rap on saying that we don't, but I think, we are and have made continuous investments in our schools and in our children. The school's budget, that those monies for those food programs, I would support something like that.
Emily Berge, your chance to respond to Chris and talk about what you would suggest for dealing with child poverty and as it relates to our public schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent question from Chris in Eau Claire. I guess so when we say child poverty, you know, children usually don't live by themselves, right? So there, I think about families and how can we help their parents, you know, like provide for their families and make sure kids are provided for and children are provided for. And so when you come, you know, you talk about budget and policy, right? You know, actually in just the front page of our local paper, Lear Telegram, you know, I think last week or the week before, a huge article about how state K through 12 spending drops below the U.S. average. And over the last 10 years, funding for our school kids, our public school kids, have continued to decline. I mean, and as I know, working on a budget, a city council, and even, frankly, my own household budget, you know, your budget is a statement of your priorities. So where your money goes, where the most money goes, that's what you priority as a family, as a city, as a state, as a country. So when our funding for schools continues to decline, that says a lot. So that's right there. And then for other policy and funding, you know, you look with poverty, you know, affordable housing, and I've done a lot of work on that, the citywide level too, is, you know, people need just that housing, and they need affordable housing and accessible housing. And that can go a long ways to make sure that people can provide for their families and for their children. And then health care too, you know, you look at Medicaid, that's another thing that was in the bill that the governor put in, and the legislature decided not to take, you know, expand Medicaid. Healthcare costs continue to go up, and it's hard to access. I, as a mental health professional and a counselor, I see that every day, and I hear about it. And and that contributes to poverty because, you know, when people are sick, they can't work, you know, or if they have sick kids, they have to take time off of work. I mean, it goes beyond that as well. Our healthcare is directly related to our economy. And, you know, so, like, we pay into, we pay taxes, right? We pay our state taxes, and we pay our federal taxes. So our federal taxes already go for this Medicaid expansion that the legislature left. They left that money on the table. And instead of taking that money, they took it out of our state taxes that could have gone to education. So they took our education money or various programs and apply that to health care, where there is already health care monies available. So things like that, where, again, how you make those decisions tells you what your priorities are. Like, why wouldn't you want to fund more health care for people? Like, there's a, you know, again, it ties to our economy and, mm-hmm. and poverty, and there's so many other issues. And it's the number one issue that I hear about in the district. Health care and education, those are, and internet are the top three issues I continually hear about.
Let's talk about internet. Interstate of Education address yesterday, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Carolyn Stanford Taylor said the COVID-19 situation is exacerbating achievement gaps for children in poverty, that 15% of students don't have adequate internet at home to learn virtually, either because they can't afford it or because it's technically not available. Emily Berger, is a rural district, the 68th is less likely than its urban counterparts to offer residents access to high-quality, affordable broadband internet access. What can and should the legislature do about it?
Well, I think they need to make it a priority. You know, I think, I mean, you look at what, the 30s, 40s, when they brought electricity, I mean, our nation and state decided that we need to bring electricity to the farms in rural Wisconsin. And they made it a priority in public-private partnerships, and they made it happen. So that's what we need to do with internet. Internet is very important for, yes, and I hear that all the time. I have, again, as a counselor, you know, I had to, when the Safer at Home order went through, I very quickly put my practice online and did telemedicine. But that only solved the problem for some, well, you know, for part of the way. I had clients say, I don't have, because people come to Eau Claire for their health care needs, including mental health care needs. And so I see a lot of people in rural Wisconsin, and they had to tell me, you know what, I don't have internet at home, or I don't have good internet at home, and I can't continue my counseling. So I see how it affects people. So it is a problem, and it needs to be a priority. And it needs to probably be put in the budget of like what, and in public-private partnerships as well. And it just needs to make some make it happen, basically.
Jesse James, what work does the legislature have yet to do and the state have yet to do to expand access to broadband?
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously this is an issue. It's not even just for the rural areas. I just found out yesterday that even the city of Milwaukee has issues with broadband service and availability. So that was kind of an eye-opening statement that I heard from a fellow legislator. You know, I'm going to do a shout-out. Representative Romaine Quinn from Rice Lake area, he was highly invested in this. And I had numerous discussions with him because he was kind of the leader on the assembly side regarding the rural broadband issues. And this is a priority, I think, for any legislator that is a representative up in northwestern Wisconsin, anywhere in Wisconsin where broadband is an issue, because it is an issue in the 68th Assembly District. You know, this last year, we connected over around 15,000 homes and businesses which didn't have reliable internet service previously. We made a $44 million investment in the budget for broadband, which quadrupled the previous amount that was invested in broadband. So we are making investments in broadband. We're looking at improving broadband to an additional 50,000 homes and businesses this next this year, well, pending our budget constraints and stuff. But, you know, this is something that we need to continuously invest in. We need to make it it is a priority for us. And, you know, as electricity went through the prairies of Wisconsin to get run through, it's going to take those private-public partnerships with the energy co-ops and the charter communications and et cetera, like Spectrum, to make this happen. And the conversations and dialogues have already started, and it's going to take some time, but we are invested in this, and it is a priority.
Staying on education for one more question, WPR reported this week, it's partly an education question, but WPR reported this week on the mental health toll of virtual schooling and the disruptions of COVID-19 it's causing in the lives of students and their families. The article includes the following quote from a child development professor: "This crisis has just magnified the vulnerabilities that we've always been aware of." Jesse James, the next budget, Superintendent Stanford Taylor has proposed a biennial budget that asks for more money towards special education and mental health services. That next budget, you've already said, is bound to be a restrictive one. Does Superintendent Taylor's proposal stand a chance of approval in the legislative budget deliberations when we're looking for cuts?
Yeah, I'm not going to say yes or no to that question. We're going to have to look at the totality of the entire budget. Mental health is a priority for me. Obviously, for Senator Bernier and I, we introduced the bill for our mental health beds in our area. We have 8 juvenile beds from Superior to La Crosse and Hudson to Wausau that serve our youth in this area. We're going to expand it and have a juvenile facility available for mental health and regional stabilization services at St. Joseph's Hospital, and then additional 34 beds available at Sacred Heart, which will be adult only. So that's an investment that we need to look at. This mental health is on the rise. It's on the increase. It was even before this pandemic happened, and it's worse now. And it is a priority, and Emily and I even sat down and had coffee together discussing this, that how mental health is a priority for both of us. So, I mean, it's something that obviously is being recognized more and more. And as far as the budget goes, again, I'm one of 132 legislators in our state. You know, we're going to have to prioritize, and I honestly believe the virtual learning has impacted our kids. I did read that article that you guys published, and kudos for bringing that to the attention, because a lot of people, if you're not engaged with your child as a parent, you don't really know how they're feeling, and even my own child is going through the same experiences. So it is frustrating and it is trying times. What we need to just be able to provide the best services to our children that are available, whether we bring telehealth, mental health services into our schools, where if the kids don't feel comfortable talking with somebody or the counselor is not available, that they can go to a screen and talk that way to somebody, because our kids talk to screens all the time now today. So that's a reality that they probably feel more comfortable than I would talking to a screen. I want that human interaction one-on-one, but, you know, that's just the way our society is today. But to answer that question, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to look at that. But I'm not going to make any promises.
Emily Berge, you are a mental health professional. What should the legislature be looking at regarding programs dealing with mental health in school children?
Again, my brain goes to Medicaid expansion. We're leaving money on the table that can help these programs, mental health and programs, because that mental health is healthcare, and Medicaid would help that. So that's one concrete example. And then schools are, you know, there's so the beds with Sacred Heart and St. Joseph's, and you know. The beds are, I mean, that was my job. I worked in the ER, and people would come in, and I would find beds for them. So I understand that there is limits on that, but that's, like, on the tail end. You know, mental health is kind of, it's on a continuum, and that's, like, when someone's suicidal, wants to hurt themselves or someone else, and when they want to go to a locked, they need to go to a locked unit. That's what these beds are. These are locked units. They cannot leave. I mean, if they're there voluntarily, they could leave, but if they're chaptered, they can't. But they are locked. And I feel like that's just one part of the mental health thing. And I think preventative mental health, you know, in the schools, like starting, like kids are already gathering at school, so why don't we do mental health counseling there? Or even, you know, programs, having the school counselor come in and talking about things. There's so much more that we can look at. And on the preventative level, which is more cost-effective anyways, it's so expensive to put someone in these locked units, and they don't even, like, they're there for psychiatry, so medication, and to keep them safe. And if they need to be, if they're chaptered, then they go, you know, to court as well. But, like, there's that much counseling that happens on the hospitals, and they're often only there for a 72-hour hold. So, like, that's part of the big picture. We need to really focus on preventative mental health and just, you know, if someone's child's having is depressed, how can they get to see a counselor that they can afford and is accessible if they're in rural Wisconsin? So I think looking at the big, that's what we need to look at. And the people who are closest to the problems are closest to the solutions. So talking to mental health professionals, talking to teachers about, like, what are the problems or what are the solutions that they have for this, I think that's very important too.
Emily Berge of Eau Claire is the Democratic candidate. Jesse James of Altoona, the Republican incumbent. We're talking to the candidates in the 68th Assembly District, which includes portions of Eau Claire, Chippewa, Clark, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. You can join the conversation. Actually, you can't call right now because our lines are full. We will be getting to the phone calls coming up right after this break. We'll take what we have as for phone calls, 800-228-5615 when somebody drops off, or ideas@wpr.org is a way you can reach us as well, ideas@wpr.org. Just send an email, and we'll try to include that if we can. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on the West Side with the candidates from the 68th Assembly District. Jesse James, the Republican incumbent from Altoona. Emily Berge, the Democratic challenger from Eau Claire. Let's go to the phones now. Our lines are full. Let's deal with some of the folks who are calling in. Jan from Eau Claire has been waiting. Jan, thank you for joining the West Side.
Hello, and thank you for the show. I'm enjoying it. I really disagree with Jesse James about his statement about how much cooperation there is in the Assembly and Senate for some of our major issues. I attended a public hearing that was part of Speaker Robin Voss's task force on guns and suicide prevention and trying to prevent some of the violence that occurs with guns. And after months of having these task forces, what you came out with was a grant of money to gun shop owners to try to recognize people who might be suicidal. Instead of working with mental health providers, you know, qualified mental health providers, with law enforcement and with the court system to provide that kind of identification and to try to set up some common sense methods to keep guns away from children, this is what you came up with. This is not working together at all. Also, we worked all through the Scott Walker administration and with the time that you've been in the assembly, Jesse James, to try to accept the Medicaid money. Wisconsin has given up millions of dollars in money that we pay for with our taxes that we could be using to help with some of these mental health problems.
Jan, thank you for your call. Jesse James, the question directed to you. We can deal with both those topics at one at a time if you'd like. First, let's talk gun control. What gun control measures do you support for Wisconsin?
Well, the mention of the gun shop bill that she's talking about, I did work with my Democrat colleague, Melissa Sargent, on that bill. She was a co-author on that bill, so she agreed to that proposal that did pass the Assembly, and it's in the Senate as well. The thing is we as human beings need to invest in each other. And the reality is humans kill humans, and the method that they use, guns, there is actually more deaths statistically through the uniform crime reports reported by the FBI with hands, feet, fists, and knives, people killed that way, than there were with guns. So, again, I am pro-Second Amendment. We have the right to bear arms. We have the right to protect ourselves, even during these times. And I'm going to tell you, as a cop right now, I am a law enforcement officer. I'm proud to wear the badge. And I my head's on a swivel all the time now. Even up in our area, my head's on a swivel because of what's happening through all of this stuff, the terrorism that's happening, even in Wisconsin, the destruction and the chaos. I will protect myself by any means necessary, up to and including the use of a gun if it needs to be. That's what I'm trained as. That's me being a police officer, because it's scary times for all of us cops right now, and we're getting the raw end of the deal.
I got to challenge that for a second. Where is the terrorism you're seeing in western Wisconsin? I guess I've missed that story.
The terrorism?
Yeah.
Look at our state capitol right now. Our capitol, my office, is boarded up. I look outside my office window, and there's boards on it. I was there last Thursday, and I took a picture of it because I'm absolutely disgusted with the lack of leadership that we have down there from our governor in saying enough's enough. You're not going to destroy our capitol. You're not going to destroy our law enforcement memorial. You're not going to destroy our Lady Forward statue and of Colonel Haig as well. You're not going to do this anymore. And all the businesses around our capitol are all boarded up as well. And why is that? Why do they have to be boarded up? Because people are destroying our state property, and us as taxpayers pay for that. And look at Kenosha. That's not terrorism down there with all the burning, the car dealership, all the cars that were destroyed down there at the Kenosha car dealership. That is terrorism. That is domestic terrorism that's happening on our Wisconsin soil. And the cops are getting blamed for all this, and it's because of cops. And I'm 100% pro-law enforcement, and I'll always back the badge.
We'll get to the Medicaid expansion next, but Emily Berge, I want to give you a chance to talk about gun laws in Wisconsin. Do you have any thoughts about that or proposals?
Well, there's a lot there. So, again, speaking from my experience as a mental health counselor, so guns, yeah, so I see it more as suicide and domestic disturbance. And I know, unfortunately, you know, when people have, and there is prevent. So what I kind of heard is that you can prevent suicide, you can prevent homicide. And I think It's about, yes, warning signs is one of them. And so then what do you do? So if you think that, like, I have a duty to warn as a counselor, you know, like if someone comes in and say, I'm going to go shoot someone, I, like, confidentiality then goes out the window and I need to tell someone that this person's going to, you know, do something to this person. But the other people may not have those tools of protecting, so there's warning signs out there that are at suicide. You know, how can we prevent gun violence is what we need to talk about. You know, 99% of the gun owners are responsible. You know, people, you know, they use guns, like, use it for hunting and for recreation, for protection. But there are times when people don't use guns responsibly or safely, and they hurt people. They use it to threaten people. I see it and hear it with domestic abuse situations. I know our law enforcement, you know, they get nervous with guns. When they're called to a call, they don't know what's there and if people have guns there and what state they're in, what mental health state they're in, or if they're on drugs or alcohol. So guns do make things more dangerous, but so there can be guidance around that and there can be laws around that. Of being able to protect our community, being able to protect our kids from suicide, too.
We are coming toward the end of the hour, and I want to get as many of our listener questions in as we can. Let's go back to Jan's question about expansion of Medicaid. And Emily Berge, you've touched on this, but it sounds like that's something you would have supported had you been in the legislature.
Yes. I think that's an answer right there. Like, again, we already pay for it. Why don't we use it to expand healthcare? That's the number. Education, healthcare, internet is what I'm hearing in the district. That's what people want. And here's the answer, and we just look the other way. And then take money then from our state funds that go to education and other mental health and use it for healthcare. While there's this money over here that we've already paid for that they're not using. It just doesn't make any sense.
And Jesse James, your party's leadership took that out of the budget as part of the budget process, the idea of expanded Medicaid. Where do you stand on that?
Well, again, right now in our state, if anybody wants to have health care coverage, they can. There's no gap in coverage. It's available for the people of our state.
Okay.
Sorry,
I thought you were done.
No, now, you look at Illinois below us, they have, they took the Medicaid expansion, and they're asking the federal government for a bailout because of COVID-19. And we as legislators in Wisconsin, along with other state legislatures through our nation, appealed to the Congress saying, please don't give any bailouts because of the predicament that they're in. New York and Illinois are prime examples. Now, I believe last time I was asked this question, Rhode Island, the governor out there, wanted to impose a 10% income tax increase because what they're finding out is the numbers that they think of those that are going to enroll into the Medicaid plan are sometimes doubling, tripling, and up to tripling. I think Rhode Island is a prime example. They had their Medicaid that was offered to their state citizens. It tripled, and they did not have the funding available to cover that as a state because everybody thinks it's free federal money. Well, nothing's free, and as the time goes on, each state has to pay a certain percentage of this back up to 10% because eventually it does get to a 90-10 split, and the states have to adequately prepare and budget for that. And I think it was not sold properly in the beginning, and that's what put these states in the conundrum that they're in right now. And they're facing a budget deficit, and they want us as other states to bail them out with that. And I don't agree with that.
Let's move on to a question from Ellen, who has emailed us and asked, please ask both candidates, have you signed the Fair Maps pledge to end gerrymandering in Wisconsin? If you have not, a 72% of Wisconsin residents want nonpartisan districts. Why would you oppose them? Jesse James, where are you on redistricting?
Well, you know, again, this is an interesting issue. Again, our state constitution says that the lawmakers draw the maps. Now, Does that mean me as a lawmaker? No. But the legislature for state and Senate districts, they're up to drawing the maps every 10 years. Each of our districts has a population, well, it's 57,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I to this day, and I've asked for this from those that asked me this question, please draw me a fair map of the 68th Assembly District. That's the district I represent, and I would like to see a fair map drawn of the 68th Assembly District and what it would look like so that I could have that evidence saying, oh my gosh, this is what this would look like as a fair map. Now, I don't know if that can be done or not, but again, well, our legislature has to do this, and with Governor Evers in place, we're going to have to come to the table together because he is the deciding factor, and we're going to have to see how this process moves. Now, I know he has also a group that is looking at it as well, and I'm going to be looking very forward to see what they present as well.
Yeah.
So I think moving forward.
Emily Berge, in the minute we have left, Governor Evers did recently announce the members of his People's Maps Commission. He calls the commission a nonpartisan commission charged with drawing fair and partial maps based on the 2020 census data. What's your stance, Emily Berge, on political redistricting and fair maps? And again, we've got about a minute.
Well, I definitely support fair maps, and I have signed the pledge, and I wholeheartedly believe that we need fair maps. And if the Wisconsin people want fair maps for the next 10 years, they need to elect people this year, representatives that believe in fair maps. Legislature, state constitution says they need to approve the maps, not draw the maps. That the last time they did it, Republicans used lawyers and partisan data to draw the maps. So, you know, this time I think we need nonpartisan data, which the Iowa model does. That's the data we need to use to draw the maps. The leaders, representative leaders, should not get to choose. That's what gerrymandering is. They get to choose their district so they can stay in power. That does not fair. That's not how democracy works. So fair maps means democracy. So I support that.
Emily Berge and Jesse James, thank you both for being with us today and for taking part in this conversation.
Thank you, Dean, and thank you, Emily, for the conversation today. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, Dean, and thank you, Representative James. Have a great day.
Catherine Thomas pulled together today's show as producer and call screener. Kate Spranger and Patrick Eikens manage the publicity and archives. Sue Johnson and Bonnie Clark are our transcriptionists. Next week on the West Side, it's the 29th District Assembly debate. Don't forget our membership drive has begun. Show your support by contributing now at 888-202-2552 or go online at WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.